Jenna Friedman. Jenna is the first member of the Beta 4 Timer Club. She's a comedian, filmmaker, writer, producer, and host of Indefensible on AMC Networks. Jenna's also written for The Daily Show, and she received an Oscar nomination for her work on Borat, subsequent movie film. And now, Jenna can add author and essayist to her resume. Her debut collection is Not Funny, essays on life, comedy, culture, etc. With this book, Jenna has accomplished something that is very difficult to pull off. She's managed to find the literary equivalent of her stand-up comedy voice. Jenna covers topics like sexism in comedy, cancel culture, celebrity worship, and tone-deaf corporations. All of it in her trademark brash and darkly comedic style. Near the end of Not Funny, Jenna admits essay writing is her Achilles heel. With all due respect, I disagree. So I asked Jenna, what is it about her essays that she doesn't like?
Once I'm into it, I enjoy it. And I enjoy getting that first draft in. But I think like a lot of comedians and performers, you kind of become a performer because it's easier to do that than sit down and write. So I would say that is what I meant by that it's my Achilles heel. It feels like pulling teeth to sit down and write a first draft or something.
Yeah. So were you nervous, apprehensive at all when you decided you were going to write this book? You know, you're pivoting from writing jokes, writing for TV and doing stand-up to writing prose. Was that something you were worried about before you started writing?
Yes. I think writing essays, especially when they are earnest, it opens you up to, there's a vulnerability to it. And I think that exposes you a little bit more, whereas like with a joke, you can hide behind it. But if you're writing an essay about something, you're exposing yourself in a way that I'm not totally used to.
Mm-hmm. You say that one of the reasons that you called this book Not Funny is that it perfectly sums up your origin story. How so?
Well, I got into comedy by writing an academic paper about comedy, which was very not funny. So that is what I meant by that. Also, I remember around the time that a lit agent had reached out to me to potentially write the book, I had tweeted something that was clearly satirical in my mind, but a lot of people picked it up as real. And I was like a fake breaking news tweet about Brock Turner speaking at the RNC. I know that prior to now, when you had a blue check mark, if you tweeted breaking news, people thought it was real. But I just assume that everybody would know that a convicted rapist would not be speaking at the RNC. And that tweet caused a lot of backlash. And there was, a Stanford professor who wrote in maybe the Portland Mercury or somewhere that like my tweet was not funny. And a lot of people were calling it not funny. And I just think the term not funny is so funny to me because it's so subjective and random. And I just thought it would be a really fun title for the book. Also, if you're not a fan of my comedy and you Google my name and Not Funny, a link to the book will come up.
Yeah, there you go. Very clever. That's smart marketing. You have this great essay in Not Funny about the American Girl industrial complex, which of course is low-hanging gluten-free tofu for us here in American Dairyland since American Girl was founded in Middleton,
yeah.
Wisconsin. You were inspired to create your own fictionalized doll company, and I was just very fascinated by this whole story. Why?
Oh, I mean, well, I was writing for a political sketch show. And so I was looking for content and I always kind of found American Girl funny. So I went to the store on Michigan Avenue and I saw that they had a play and I watched the play and the play was basically a sales pitch for their whole collection. And even then, it just seemed so messed up. Like there was one black doll, her name is Addie Walker and she's a runaway slave. And there was a Depression era doll who came with accessories that cost more than a real, there was like this toy broom that cost more than a real one. And the comedy that just kind of wrote itself. I remember reading about how there were the people of Pilsen were protesting outside the American Girl store because the doll of 2005, Marisol Luna, her backstory was problematic, bordering on racist, talking about this girl from Pilsen leaving her dangerous neighborhood and moving to Downers Grove, which is a Chicago suburb. And it was funny that there was so much controversy around this doll company, but also the company itself, just how tone deaf they were. It just was perfect comedic fodder to make fun of them. So I was always a fan of Garbage Pail Kids, and I thought, what could be like a Garbage Pail Kid version of this world? And so I came up with the Refugee Girls Review. And so it was like this overly earnest company that had all these refugees from all over the world. And I wrote a play, and I got all of my friends in Chicago to trust me to put it, like, to perform in my play, and we put it up, and the whole experience was wild, which again I write about in the book.
Yeah, and we don't want to give away spoilers. Originally, I was so enamored of that essay that when I started writing my first draft of questions, I was asking all these questions about the American Girls. Yeah, have you ever considered monetizing your fictionalized doll company?
Well, I was really myself over earnest when I wrote it. So I was trying to think of a way to fundraise. So when I actually wrote the first version of the play, I reached out to local refugee resettlement organizations in Chicago and tried to raise money for them, where all the proceeds from the play would go to them. We never made any proceeds from the play, but my heart was in the right place. But again, you're doing this like edgy, dark political satire that might not be the best tool to actually fundraise for actual refugees. That was like an original pipe dream of mine. And then, or also having dolls that were like Garbage Pail Kid versions of American Girl dolls. But then the sad irony is, to make any money on them, you'd have to probably do it through like child labor. And that inspired another doll who made the parts for all the other dolls in the Refugee Girl Doll Factory. She didn't end up in the play, but I thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. One of your essays is called Brief Interviews with Hilarious Men. I love the idea of playing off David Foster Wallace's short story collection, Brief Interviews with Hideous Men. And in this essay, you interview several male comedians, including Jon Stewart and former Beta guests Bob Odenkirk and Fred Armisen. What inspired you to do this?
The questions that I've gotten from every journalist besides for you. So many journalists unwittingly ask female comics inane questions repeatedly. And I remember seeing a video of Meryl Marco in around 1980 on a couch on some public access show. And the interviewer said, do you think women can be pretty and funny? Or do you think women can be funny? Or asked some question in 1980. And I just around like 2010, 11, 12 was getting those same questions. It has gotten better, but we still get questions that just, I think when you're interviewing someone, if you can sit back and say, would I ask a guy the same question? And if the answer is no, then you know that's a lame question. So I assembled a bunch of questions that I've gotten and that female comedian friends of mine have gotten. And then I asked them to my favorite male comedians.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite interview or a favorite comment that was made among the many interviews?
Well, part of me would have loved to have put it all on film, just because there was so much, even in the audio. Like, I remember when I asked John if we were talking about something really interesting, and then I completely switched topics and said, do you think women should accept Louis's apology or something like that? And he just cackled because of the delivery and the way that I asked it. And he told an anecdote about how Matt Lauer did something similar to him when he was on the Today Show trying to promote an autism benefit, and how Matt Lauer just quickly shifted gears and asked about Louis or something to that effect. And so I wish I captured it via audio. I haven't released it because I would ask for permission before I released any of the recordings. But all of the guys were such good sports. And I think there was one moment when it was like possibly Bob Odenkirk said something to the effect of like, because I felt so, he was my first person I interviewed. Mm-hmm. And even though he knew the premise of the interview, I still felt bad asking questions like, do you write your own material? And he said something like, at least I'm giving them a heads up. Whereas like when I was asked the questions, nobody gave me a heads up. I just had to actually answer them in earnest and hope that the interviewer wasn't going to either take me out of context or try to do like a gotcha thing. So it was like a funny moment where I had such anxiety to ask questions to people who were my friends, who knew that I was doing it with like the utmost respect, who understood the premise, unlike when I actually had to answer the questions. That was, I think, my favorite moment in the interview. There was also something funny where Jim Gaffigan answered the questions in, I think, quickly while he was on tour, but it was via email, so we didn't actually have a conversation. So as I was transcribing his, you could tell that, just knowing Jim, you could tell that like he was kind of like put off by some of the questions, but he didn't really understand the tone and how his responses differed from people I was actually having conversations with. Same with Patton, both of whom were great. And it was so great that they answered the questions, but it was just funny because they, so much about comedy and is context and tone, and when you're just sending people, there were a couple other comedians I will not name that I actually sent the questions to who said that they were going to answer them, but then when I sent the questions just kind of disappeared and never answered them. Because the questions themselves, when you read them, they're so off-putting, but when you're actually having the conversation with someone, even like my tone or my inflection and something kind of mitigated any harshness in any of the questions.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for me on how I should approach interviewing male comedians?
Male comedians, they're very sensitive. So I would proceed with caution. I think what I said before, just when you're a journalist and you're asking a question to someone, just think in the back of your mind, would I ask somebody who was a different gender, a different race? Like, would I ask somebody the same question? I think that artists want to be perceived for the work that they do, not their identity for the most part. Identity always factors into it. But I remember someone recently emailed me and asked me to weigh in on like Jewish humor. And I just was kind of put off by that because they weren't Jewish. And also I'm definitely Jewish, but my humor isn't necessarily about being Jewish. And so I think that just in terms of, you know, when you talk to anyone, like think about just the types of questions that you're asking and why.
Yeah, that's a very good answer. Thank you so much. What was the most
difficult?
You're
a friend.
You sort of reframed it in my head kind of thing. And I hope I know, but I did learn from your answer. So thank you for your advice. Can you point to one essay in Not Funny as being the most difficult to write?
The cancel culture essay, I think, was the most difficult to write because everyone's talked about cancel culture. At the time that I wrote it, it was over a year ago. So I do feel like we've moved on a little bit from it, but we're still having discussions about cancel culture, which are so tedious and exhausting. So it was like trying to figure out what to say that, like how to add to the conversation and why I'm even talking about it. And I did kind of come up with my shtick, which is really just that it's conversations about cancel culture themselves are kind of a grift and like, I want in on it too, you know, but then it did get me thinking like I was able to incorporate my experience working for Roseanne, that brief half day where I was writing on her show before she got canceled, and just weigh in on other things that I actually have experienced firsthand connected to cancel culture. So I think I landed on something pretty good, but that was definitely the hardest essay in the book.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be. I'm curious about what is next for Jenna Friedman. I'm thinking hopefully the Mark Twain Comedy Prize for American Humor. Seriously. Right. Don't you think? You've got a suit shot at that. You wouldn't be...
No.
No. But come on, we have women already, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, right. Tina Fey, Lily Tomlin. Right. Why not? Right. Why not Jenna Friedman? I know it's out of your control, but why not?
Well, you can tell them, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm too young for an award like that, but...
Could be.
I am developing some stuff. I know that sounds vague, and it always is. But
it always is, but okay. And you can't tell us what media it is or anything. Probably more TV.
TV.
Okay. All right. But that's something. Are you optimistic that this will happen?
No.
I figured that was going to be the answer. Considering the way Hollywood runs and operates and doesn't run properly, I'm not surprised. Jenna Friedman, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us. Congratulations on Not Funny. It is smart and hilarious, just like you. Looking forward to talking to you for the fifth time, whenever that may be.
Thank you so much.
Comedian Jenna Friedman is the author of Not Funny, Essays on Life, Comedy, Culture, etc. Find out more about her at wpr.org/beta.
When I started singing with Ness, and his tunes, of course, always had a bit of a country flavor, we'd start singing, and I would just automatically fall into that harmony above him.
Coming up, the last remaining monkey, Mickey Dolenz, joins us. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.